Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
What is happening, gang? We are live on the Inside Football Podcast with Bill Polian, and we are jacked about the game this weekend. It's finally upon us, the big one, Super Bowl 56. And I think this is going to be a really interesting episode because I think some people in the media and some of fans and some other people sort of tangentially related to the game are getting a little bit of a Bengals lean. But I think what's interesting in this is Bill really breaks down the matchups in today's episode. And I think you're going to have a sense for there might be some more ways for the Bengals to win this game than I think some of the pundits are thinking. So this is truly an interesting breakdown of the game, and we cannot wait to bring it to you. But before we dive into today's show, I want to take a minute and talk about one of our favorite sponsors on the pod, Bet Online. The big game is finally here as we hit Super Bowl Sunday with the last game of football season. As always, Bet Online has you covered from odds, scores, totals, player performance props to where the next fired coach is going to land. Bet Online is the number one spot for all NFL betting in 2022. And it's not just football. BetOnline's basketball, hockey, boxing, UFC odds coverage is the best in the business. From sports right down to your favorite Vegas casino games, BetOnline is your number one online wagering destination. So head to BetOnline today or use your mobile device to sign up and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use promo code BELIEVE, B-L-E-A-V, to get started. The fastest and easiest way to wager on all your favorite sports and play your favorite sports games. BetOnline, where the game starts. All right, guys. Here we go. It's our long-awaited preview of Super Bowl 56 on the Inside Football Podcast with Bill Polian. Here we go. What is happening, gang? We are live on the Inside Football Podcast with Bill Polian. It is that week. It is that time where we've got the biggest game of the year. Super Bowl 56 is in front of us. And I feel like somebody has done a lot of work on developing Super Bowl blueprints as we head into the Super Bowl. I feel like he might have some ideas on how this one might work out. And we might get a post log for a potential book that just came out. How are we doing today, guys?
Doing pretty well, thank you. And the name of the book is Super Bowl Blueprints, and it's by Vic Carucci and myself, and it's available on Amazon and wherever your sports books can be purchased.
One small correction, though I love Vic Carucci, it's by Bill Polian and Vic Carucci, not book Vic Carucci and Bill Polian.
It's a great read for this week and beyond. I've enjoyed it thoroughly.
Yeah, it is. Because it was interesting, Bill, is when you expanded beyond your own experience in this, you know, and really gave sort of the broader view of everything, which was so interesting. And, you know, it was only somebody like you that could get all those guys to talk about this stuff.
Well, it's an oral history. And so these are the people who actually lived it and made it happen.
Exactly.
Owners, general managers, head coaches, players, assistant coaches talking about their experience and how it took place. So It's there are a lot of great stories in there and anecdotes that no one's ever heard before.
Exactly.
So it's fun.
You are also the Studs Terkel of the NFL.
Well,
all right, on to the Super Bowl.
And in certain places, it's a very hopeful book of a simpler time when certain cities could actually win games.
That's true. There's some truth to that.
Yeah.
All right, here we go. What are we thinking, Bill?
Well, this Super Bowl is really interesting and exciting in many ways. First of all, it's got a team that hasn't been there in Lord knows how long, 30-plus years, the Bengals. And they are no longer the Bungles, that's for sure. And it's got a Ram team that's been knocking on the door for a little bit. And this year went all in terms of trading high choices to get veteran players who can help them win the Super Bowl now, echoing the famous Branch Rickey line, Branch Rickey being the patron saint of all general managers in every sport. He was with the St. Louis Cardinals, Brooklyn Dodgers, and Pittsburgh Pirates in his heyday. And he said, the only one you can win is the one you can win now.
Yep.
And so that's the way the Rams have operated. So,
and then George Allen, right? The future is now.
The future is now. Yes. Yeah. Harkening back to the Rams of George Allen, who never made it to the Super Bowl, by the way. When you break it down, it's really interesting. And I think a lot closer than some of the so-called experts are talking about, even though I think they're talking about the wrong things, because media people love stories, and Joe Burrow's a story, and Stafford's a story, and Jamar Chase is a story. And so that's who they talk about, but that's not what's going to decide the game. So I did kind of a deep dive into both teams, put my old advanced scouts hat on, which I love doing, and came up with some interesting information. By the way, I'll echo Bill Parcells. I can tell you how the game's going to be played. I can tell you the strengths and weaknesses of both teams. I can't tell you who's going to win.
Right.
If I did, I wouldn't be here. I'd be in Las Vegas placing bets.
Yeah.
None of us would be here. We'd be doing many other things.
And living in a much larger house.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, with a larger staff, someone walking the dog and so on and so forth.
Exactly. Exactly.
But the only time we're going to see matchups of the traditional tail of the tape type things that you see in the media is the two quarterbacks. So I'll start there, and then we'll go platoon versus platoon, which is really what happens in the game. The quarterbacks touch the ball on every play, so you do have to compare them. In Matthew Stafford's case, he's got a 115.6 QBR for the playoffs. We're talking only playoffs now because everything else is prologue. It's how you play in the playoffs that counts.
Yep.
He's got 6 touchdowns and 1 interception, which is pretty amazing, and 9.1 APC, average per attempt. So that's a big, big number. So in your mind's eye, if you've just been listening and watching television, you think that Joe Burrow is the throw the ball down the field guy, and Matthew Stafford is a dump off guy to Cooper Kupp. That's not the case. Although Cooper Kupp contributes greatly to that. Joe Burrow is 4 touchdowns and 2 interceptions, so he's right on the number for this kind of competition. 7.7 average. That's not an outlier. It's real.
Yep.
And 96.2 QBR, which is considerably below Stafford, but 3rd among all playoff quarterbacks, Mahomes being number 1. Stafford is number 2 in QBR. So Joe Burrow is the hot story. He's the star. The cognoscenti are saying, well, you know, will Matthew Stafford throw a stupid interception that'll cost him the game? Well, Joe's got 1 more than Matthew has in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
So it's close enough. Bottom line, the guy that's protected best is likely to be the guy that wins. Here is a statistic that is mind-boggling. 38 times in Super Bowl history, the team that won the turnover battle won the game. So that's it in a nutshell.
Right.
If you turn it over more than the other team, your chances of winning the Super Bowl are
decrease exponentially.
Down the sewer.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
So that's critical. All right. Having said that, let's compare the Bengals offense against the Rams defense. Jamar Chase, I would guess they're going to travel Ramsey with him. I would guess that because he's so much better than everybody else. Now, the other two guys are not slouches, but he's Jamar Chase is, and he's the man. He's Joe's guy. So that's the one you want to take away. I wouldn't be a bit surprised to see Ramsey travel with him. And if that's the case, that matchup is even.
Does that sort of effectively take Chase out of the, is Ramsey playing at a level where he can sort of neutralize Chase?
No, because you can put Chase in a bunch. You can put him in motion. You can do a number of different things to get him open.
Right.
The same with Kupp. You could do a number. That's where coaching comes in. You start with the premise that they're probably going to travel Ramsey and maybe press him. So, let's see how we can get him open. That's the coaching part of it.
And would you do that, Bill, in a sense, independent of whether it's a zone or a man-to-man?
I mean, you prepare for both.
But it could be like a box and one, right? He just goes with him?
Yeah, it could be, or you could double him. They're going to do different things. But that's where the X's and O's come in. And we'll analyze that next week. We don't know what the game plans are.
Hey, Bill, to that point also, how much of Chase as a factor as a running back could kind of affect Ramsey throughout the course of the game in terms of if he is traveling with them and they run a lot of jet sweep action and maybe he's the primary tackler in a lot of plays, can that wear Ramsey down through the course of the game?
Well, it would wear his legs down, but it works both ways. You know, you don't want Chase running a lot of phony sweeps, you know, where he's a decoy, where it's just a fake because you're using up his legs. But you likely, you know, if they were doing a lot of that, you get out of traveling Ramsey with him and play zone and let the guy, the other corner, force.
Yeah.
That's where you make an on the ball call. You know, they see the formation or they see the alignment that tells them, because you can't run a fly sweep from the opposite sideline, he's got to be close. His alignment has to be close.
Right.
So when he's in that alignment,
yeah,
you call off whatever's there and zone off, you know.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Those are the things to watch during the game.
Yeah.
And hopefully the color commentator is smart enough and prepared well enough to tell you what's going on there.
Yeah.
Jamar Chase, by the way, 20 catches, 279 yards, 13.91 TD. So 13.9, you know, I think if you got him below 12 in the ball game, that's a victory.
Yeah.
Because that means he's not really affecting the game with big plays. T. Higgins is the opposite receiver, 14 for 208, 14.9. He's the longer guy and physically and the longer guy in terms of getting the ball down the field. And the Rams, he's a mismatch on the Bengals side. The Rams don't have anybody that can basically handle him. Tyler Boyd is 10 for 62, 6.2. He's the possession receiver. That's a push with whoever's on him. And C.J. Uzomah may or may not play. He may or may not be 100%. We'll find out. He's 13 for 135, 10.4, one touchdown. 10.4 is 10 is the magic number for a tight end. That means that he's affecting the defense, usually in the middle of the field, and picking up first downs. And so Uzomah is a big part of their offense, and Burrow likes him. He's got chemistry with him.
I think he's listed as a probable now, Bill.
He's listed as probable, but the question then is, you know, what can he do ultimately? It's an ankle injury. Can you shoot it? Can he play? You know, you don't know all those things.
Well, and Bill, this is definitely a stupid fan question, but it seems to me like Troy Reader for the Rams has had a tough time in space in the playoffs a little bit. Having the ability to have Uzomah or potentially players who can work the middle, that's maybe one of the bigger advantages the Bengals could exploit.
Yeah, that's right. You took the words right out of my mouth. That's the mismatch there is with the Rams linebackers working in the middle of the field,
right?
Whether it's man or zone, and that's a plus for the Bengals. Uzomah's a plus for the Bengals.
Yeah,
because he you know, Reader does struggle with coverage,
and he seems to over pursue massively.
Well, his job is to pursue and to force the ball back in a lot of cases.
Okay.
So I don't fault him on that. He's just not a great space guy. He's not like Milano with the Bills or somebody like that. You know, he's more of a run linebacker, play the run guy. Again, the linebackers match up against Joe Mixon. Joe's got 119 attempts. 3.7 average, which is slightly below what you'd like. You'd like it to be 4, one touchdown, and then 13 interceptions, 190 yards, I should say. 13 receptions, 106 yards, 8.2. So there you go again, working the middle of the field with Uzomah and Mixon, who can catch the ball and run with it after the catch. that's a big mismatch for in terms of the Bengals. So the Bengals have an advantage in the passing game, and they have an advantage, a big advantage in the running game. And I just read this morning that the Rams are now talking about alternating three backs in there. Now, that may be a false flag, too. It may be that they're trying to convince the Bengals that they're going to run the ball, or maybe it's the case. But Mixon is better than any of the three running backs that the Rams have because Akers is banged up, and that may be the reason they're going to have three guys up. But Mixon's got juice, and he's got power, and he can make you miss.
I mean, the Rams backs are only averaging 2.9 yards per rush. I mean, it's terrible.
Akers is out of tough playoffs.
Yeah. Yeah, Akers is the guy that can raise that advantage, but if he's not 100%, then that's another question.
But Bill, everybody's obviously talked about the Rams defensive line from a pass rush perspective, but this is kind of a two-parter. Mixon seemed to really get it rolling in the second half against Kansas City. How much momentum do you think that carries over for him into this week? And then two, are the Rams, how hard are they to run against versus sort of the pass rush?
Well, they're not terribly hard to run against. The Rams are, you know, they're decent against the run, but the time you want to run against them is when they're in nickel. When you force them into nickel, because now they got Von Miller and Floyd on the end, and they've got Superman inside, and Greg Gaines and Bobby Brown alternating in there, principally Greg Gaines. So you can run against them in nickel. A'shaun Robinson, pretty good inside. You know, in the normal base alignments, they're pretty good against the run because Reader's good against the run and Trayvon Howard is good against the run. They're both somewhat liabilities against the pass. But the key thing is that they're hard to run against in base. So when they're in base, throw. When they're in nickel, run.
Yeah. Because my theory of the case has been, everybody's talked about the quarterbacks. Joe Mixon, this is a Joe Mixon game where he could win a Super Bowl for the Bengals.
Yeah, you're exactly right. You're exactly right.
Yeah.
Because he's better than anybody that the Rams have.
Yeah.
In
both at the position group and in the just on the one-on-one matchups. So on the Rams D, obviously we know Von Miller's very good. He's got two sacks. Aaron Donald's all world. A'shaun Robinson is really good against the run. That's the base front. And Okoronkwo and another cast of thousands will play right. In the base front. And Leonard Floyd, if they play three-man, which they do a lot of on base, is good against the run. And then the nickel front will be Von Miller, Aaron Donald, probably Greg Gaines and Leonard Floyd. So that's a mismatch with the Rams. No question about that.
Yeah.
None whatsoever.
And Bill, in terms of the Burrow interceptions, when you looked at those, you know, with the number of times he's been sacked and pressured, do you think when his interceptions are more likely to be just having to unload the ball, or is he making wrong decisions or just inaccurate throws on his own?
No, he doesn't make very many inaccurate throws. It'll be the result of pressure.
Right. So he's in trouble. I mean, yeah.
Yeah. Now, he didn't make any errant throws. He took the sacks against Tennessee.
Right.
You know, he really protected the ball. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But, I mean, he did not make any crazy throws, which Stafford sometimes will do. That's the difference between the two. When you look how it stacks up, there's a slight advantage for the Bengals versus the Rams defense so long as they can protect.
Exactly.
And therein lies the problem.
Yep.
Because both tackles – Jonah Williams and Isaiah Prince are not good pass protectors. They've been alternating, I think it's pronounced Adenji and Jackson Carmen
Yep.
At right guard, but Carmen is hurt, and he's
very questionable for this one.
Very questionable.
And Denji's probably going to start.
Adenji's probably going to start. That's right. So that's a bit of a mismatch. And so, you know, the key thing is to protect Burrow. And what's interesting is you got to give the Bengals a lot of credit. They have tackles who are less than ideal in terms of their ability to pass protect, but they rarely get beaten to the inside. So what you see is Burrow's ability to step up and deliver the ball. Mm-hmm. And as was the case against Kansas City, Burrow's ability to take off and run up the middle if there's a seam there. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they do a pretty good job, better than pretty good, of protecting with two guys at tackle that really are not ideal. So, And both guys struggle against speed, and the Rams have speed off the edge.
Oh yeah,
from both edges.
That's the one that would keep me up at night. That would be the one that would keep me up. And now here's the conundrum of all conundrums. They got speed off the edge, and they have the best inside pass rusher maybe in the history of the league, or certainly in playing now, among a certain Hall of Famer inside. So you got to double him. I mean, you can't leave him one-on-one. And so then do you chip on the outside, double chip on the outside? How do you handle the outside rushes? Because Aaron Donald has to be doubled. You can't let him get to the quarterback right now. The Bengals got a protection problem. And how they solve it is going to be interesting. If I were the analyst doing the game, the first thing I would be looking at is, in nickel, how are they protecting? What is their protection scheme? Are they sliding it toward one of the other guys? Are they keeping the back in? Are they chipping? Are they using two tight ends? They may not have two tight ends to use. You know, all of that is a real problem. And if they can't protect, then I think the Rams are going to win the game.
Right. And yeah. Bill, what about countering with play calls that, you know, get the ball out of Burrow's hand more quickly rather than waiting for something?
Doesn't do any good because Aaron Donald's right there.
Yeah.
That's why the three technique is so important. He's closest to the ball.
To tackle the receiver.
Well, yeah, I mean, you would tackle the receiver, but you know, if it doesn't matter if it's quick game, if Aaron Donald gets there, he might get there before you get the ball out.
Yeah, yeah. I just meant, you know, try to have, you know, instead of trying to go with longer developing plays, quicker, I mean, might buy him a sack or two. I mean,
well, it might buy him a sack or two, but if the sack, you know, you got to handle Aaron Donald, and quick game doesn't. You don't want to be close to Aaron Donald. You don't want to give him a chance to bat the ball in the air.
You got
to
double him.
Maybe I'm crazy, but if you see Mixon with 25 carries, P. Ryan with maybe six, the Rams win the Bengals win this game.
It's likely.
This is the Joe Mixon Super Bowl, and in my mind, in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I agree. I think he has to play a major role, and maybe playing a major role in the passing game as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And P. Ryan is, by the way, a very good player in the passing game.
He got the kiss of DC. They leave here and then immediately become amazing.
Scott, you have this football theory where the whole world revolves around.
It happens.
Passing through. Okay. And
also, major fan of the National Zoo. You got to give it to Samaje Perine. Always went to the zoo.
The key thing here is, can the Bengals protect? That's number one.
Yep. Yep.
And if you're interested in the X's and O's, how are they doing it? And number two, how do the Rams cover, and who do they cover, and who becomes the open guy? If it were me, I would say I'm going to make Tyler Boyd beat us, and Uzama beat us, and Mixon beat us. I'm not going to let T. Higgins or Jamar Chase beat us. And absolutely not Jamar Chase.
Yeah.
And if Uzama can't go and it's all on sample,
then the Bengals are in tough straits. That's very difficult.
Because in my mind, is Sample a particularly good blocker or chipper? He seems.
Yeah. He is a good blocker. He's a good complement for Uzama, but they don't have another guy that can replace Uzama unless they bring in a fourth wide receiver.
Yeah. So Uzama in the probable category is in that netherworld where you really don't know.
Yeah, you don't know. You don't know whether he can make it or not. In the kicking game, their kicking game has been fine. And interestingly enough, Evan McPherson is 12 for 12. Everybody knows that. But 50 plus, he's 3 for 3. So he's got a big leg. Matt Guy, conversely, is 7 for 9. But his range outside 50 is zero. He's made none outside 50. Why do I bring that up? Well, if the weather forecast holds up and it's a really warm day, that favors the longer kicker because the ball, will travel farther in the warm air than it will in cold air. And so
it's a reverse deflate gate.
Reverse deflate gate. That's exactly right. And so McPherson becomes a bigger weapon. He's got the bigger leg. If it comes down to that, as it often does in Super Bowls, he's an advantage. So that's a plus for the Bengals. So there are more pluses for the Bengals than I think you're hearing from the so-called experts. It wouldn't surprise me if the Bengals win. And I'll just say this sentence. If the Bengals can protect, they got a hell of a chance to win the game.
And Bill, do you think part of that, just, when we've talked so many times about sort of the talking heads and the media, is some of this just, that the media is less familiar with Cincinnati because they have been on less national games? The Rams had in the preseason were kind of expected or had a good chance to get there. Nobody was picking Cincinnati. So they just continue with the assumption that the Rams are a better football team than Cincinnati, despite all the stuff you pointed out.
Yeah, I think there's some of that. And there are people who don't have the capacity to do the deep dive into it, to watch the tape and know what they're watching.
Yeah.
Or look at the statistics and interpret what they're seeing. Let's flip over to the Rams side of it now. Rams O versus Bengals D. And we've already talked about Matthew Stafford and what a great playoff series he's having. Interestingly enough, since both teams were fourth seeds, they both played three games. The bye didn't come into play. I'll digress here for a moment because this was told to me yesterday by a general manager that I really respect, and then echoed by two other people that I spoke to later in the day as I was preparing for this broadcast. The general consensus is that the 17th game wore everyone out.
Okay.
Everyone I talked to said, man, we were dead. So what we saw in the 17th game and talked about on this podcast, that week 17 was an anomaly.
Yeah.
It was an anomaly. Everybody was whipped.
Yeah.
I
mean, it was just, now, over time, will they adjust? Probably. But it played a role this year. It played a big role.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, guys just kept going, wow, man, 17, week 7, week 18, we were just whipped. People are going to have to adjust how they handle OTAs. They're going to have to do load management during the season, I think. There are a lot of things to look at in the future going forward, how to deal with 17 games.
So you had predicted that, before this started, and I was surprised to see. I don't think people did a very good job of it. I mean, they just kind of, to me, it was more like business as usual. I mean.
Well, it was because they didn't know what to expect.
To do, yeah.
Yeah, they didn't know what to expect.
And it's interesting just looking at the sort of age makeup of the two teams that made the Super Bowl. You know, you look on paper, the Bengals seem like a younger kind of team. The Rams, a little more veteran team. So there's nothing really to draw to say, hey, maybe the 17-game schedule is going to favor having a younger roster construction because you got fresher legs or some theory like that.
Well, we'll see in this over game. In this game, the two-week preparation will probably have ameliorated that some. Common sense would tell me it would, but there were overtimes. Both teams had overtimes in the playoffs. So, I mean, this is a crazy, crazy year.
This is never. And one thing I think we should mention, going back to Scott as the DC center of the football universe, is the Goff and for Stafford trade is the first trade I saw that exceeded, you know, starting quarterbacks, Bill, from when the trade was Norm Snead for Sonny Jurgensen.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, right? It's I mean, it's this you know, this
eminently forgettable.
Yeah, but you know, that was the closest to that was Milt Pappas for Frank Robinson.
Yeah. Well, that one might be even more egregious. But let's not lose our audience in baseball trivia.
All right, sorry.
So 85% some of our audience knows who Milt Pappas is outside of Baltimore.
Right, look it up.
the Rams offense is multifaceted, but it's built around Cooper Kupp. So in three games, 25 receptions, 386 yards, 15.4 average per catch, and four touchdowns. And that a lot of that 15.4 is racked run after the catch. He is the complete receiver. He's the best route runner in the league. He's got among the best hands in the league, and he's by far the best run after catch guy. So
not to mention his blocking.
Well, and he, yes, that's right. And he is a good blocker. So that's he's number one. He's the number one receiver in the league. And so you got to take him away, which makes even more mind-boggling the Tampa Bay call in the division round game, you know, which left him uncovered.
Yep.
Now it's a mistake. You don't blame the coach entirely for it. It's a mistake by both of communication and execution, but still. Put two guys on him, please.
Yeah.
Especially in game changing situations. The other receiver is Odell Beckham, who has 19 for 236, 12.4 average and one touchdown. And he is the biggest wild card in the whole deal, because you have to presume that you got to get two on Kupp most of the time. The reason being that he's not a possession receiver. He's not Wes Welker,
right?
Who ironically enough coaches the Rams receivers. He is a guy who, when the ball is in his hands, can go the distance with rack. So you got to have two on him. You got to find some way to tackle him after he catches the ball, which means that almost always you're going to have Beckham one-on-one, because they'll create formations that force you to do that. And Beckham can beat a lot of people. And when he's one-on-one and has opportunity to use that great leaping ability, those great hands, those great strong hands, that great ability to twist his body into a pretzel and do it at top speed, He's rough to handle one-on-one. So that's a conundrum that we'll talk about here in a little bit for the Cincinnati defense. Van Jefferson is very solid possession receiver and also a guy who can go deep. 5 for 79, 15.8.
Nicked up a little, though. Little nicked up.
Little nicked up, yeah. Little nicked up. Now, you know, would you say – we're going to double Cup and we're going to double Beckham and let Jefferson and the running back beat us? Maybe. You know, it's entirely possible.
This could be the Joe Mixon versus Kendall Blanton Super Bowl if we can't go.
There you go. In a Bill Belichick world, that's what they'd make it. That's for sure.
Yeah.
What is more important than peace of mind? Nothing. And that's what NordVPN is here for, to give you peace of mind while you are online. And with all the threats you face today on the internet, it's more important than ever to be sure that you have the best VPN you can get. NordVPN is the world's best VPN service, offering the fastest connectivity, most servers, and next-generation encryption to make sure everything you do online stays secure. Plus, you can use NordVPN on all your computers and devices, no matter what operating system. With NordVPN's unlimited bandwidth, you never have to worry about a slow connection either, and plans start at under $4 per month. So what are you waiting for? Grab your exclusive NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/believe. That's B-L-E-A-V. So one more time, nordvpn.com/believe. That's B-L-E-A-V to get up to 70% off your NordVPN plan, plus one additional month free. It's also risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Want to make some money? How about you invest in an exciting asset that's outpaced the S&P 500 by 164% for 25 years? I'm talking about art. Masterworks is the new investing app that lets you invest in blue chip paintings from icons like Picasso, Monet, and Warhol without needing millions. Over 300,000 people have already signed up. So what are you waiting for? Get priority access with your unique promo code. Log on to masterworks.art/believe. That's masterworks.art/believe, B-L-E-A-V. To learn more about important disclosures at masterworks.art, you will find out all the permutations of how you want to get investing in high value art today.
The tight ends are interesting cats, and the most interesting of all is Tyler Higbee, and what's his physical condition? We're going to find that out. He is the X factor in that if you decide to create coverages that are going to make it tough to get the ball to Cup and to Beckham, Higbee becomes the third option, and a very, very good third option. So he's at 9 for 115, 12.8. I mean, that's 12.8 is doing the job at tight end.
Right.
So whereas Blanton is 7 for 85, 10.7, that's right on the, that's the number that you want. But Higbee exceeds it by almost 3 yards. And so if he can go,
yeah,
boy, that's a huge plus for the Rams.
And they have him as doubtful, though.
Yes, I know that.
Hasn't been practicing. But Blanton played a really good game in the championship.
He's played okay. Their backup guys have come in and played okay. There'll be a big hat on Blanton in this game if the Bengals do what.
But the Bengals linebackers are really good.
Yes, they are. Yeah, we'll get there in a second.
Yeah.
Okay. On the offensive line. Oh well, let's talk about the running backs. Cam Akers is 151 yards, 2.8 a carry, and two fumbles. No touchdowns, but he's got juice, and he's the guy that can break big runs and explosive plays. He's not much in the passing game, but he's got a banged up shoulder. And as I said earlier, they're talking about using three running backs, which might indicate that he's not 100%. Sony Michel was a really good pickup for them. He's 78 carries, 3.3 yards, but he's a one-speed guy. He doesn't have the juice nor the power that Akers has. Akers is the number one back, but can he play? That becomes the question mark. So now we go to the offensive line. Andrew Whitworth and Austin Corbett Rob Havenstein are decent pass protectors. They struggle with speed. They struggle with movement, both of them. But the Bengals rushers are power rushers, basically. They don't have the explosive speed that the Rams rushers do. So I would be surprised if Whitworth and Havenstein can't handle or can't hold their own against the Bengals rushers. Of the two rushers, Hendrickson is the more accomplished. He's got 2.5 sacks in the preseason. Hubbard is not far behind. And they're really good rushers. They have strong hands. They're slippery, meaning they can move their bodies and get on the side of a pass protector. They're long, so that they eat up ground with strides, and they both have long arms so they can get to the passer and disrupt him. But they're not first speed, zoom, Floyd Von Miller guys. They're bigger and stronger, which makes it big and strong against big and strong, which you would think would be a push. Now, they are good stunters, and that's going to give the Rams a lot of trouble, because neither Whitworth nor Havenstein handle movement very well.
And the left guard is challenged, right?
Oh, yeah, wait, we haven't even got there yet.
Okay.
Yeah,
I was waiting. That's the one I'm waiting for. I just want to hear the adjectives.
Okay. The center and the left guard are huge liabilities.
Right.
They're not challenged. They're big-time liabilities. So the question is, DJ Reader, B.J. Hill. B.J. Hill has 1.5 sacks. So the question is, who do they put over Edwards, the left guard, and who do they put over the center? How do they align? What do they do to take advantage of what is clearly a mismatch in favor of the Bengals there? That's the weak part in the Rams' offensive line, is in the middle. So it'll be interesting to see how they handle that. And that's DJ Reader and BJ Hill. DJ Reader is a power guy, and I would probably flop them if they can, but that's hard to do with defensive linemen. But you know, that's a mismatch in there in favor of the Bengals. So too is the linebacker situation. Logan Wilson has 2 interceptions in the playoffs and 5 in addition to that during the regular season.
Hey, Bill, given the weakness of the interior of the line, how do you feel about blitzing Stafford up the middle?
I'd be careful of it. Okay. I'd be careful of it. You know, blitzing is a two-edged sword. If you can beat that, here's the basic premise. If you can win rushing 4, don't blitz.
Yeah.
And you can win on the inside rushing 4. And you may get some wins on the outside, because these are not great athletes at tackle. And whereas Hendrickson and Hubbard are, you know, they're not Bosa, but they're good, solid guys. A lot better than people know. A lot better than people know.
So what? Yeah, wouldn't that cut the other way? I mean, if you can do it without blitzing, which when you have a weakness like that, that raises the probability that a straight on rush with the lineman is going to succeed. Why would you have to blitz and open up an area?
Well, here's why. Here's why. It's a good point, but here's why. Chidobe Awuzie and Eli Apple are basically big, tough corners who can manhandle you. They're really, really, and Eli Apple has had a rebirth. Probably, you know, went back to the land of his birth, the state of Ohio, and
dotted the I, and he's feeling good again.
Yeah, dotting the I, exactly right. And traditionally, in the championship game, the memory of it still makes me sick. And in the Super Bowl, they let much more go in the secondary than normal. Witness, of course, the famous Saints Rams Super Bowl. The championship game, I should say. So Eli Apple is the handsiest player in the league. He's the guy who grabs and holds most. That's his game. It's always been that way since he came out of Ohio State. He damn near got run out of the league because of it. I don't mean run out by the powers that be, run out by the number of flags that he drew. But to Lou Anarumo's credit, the Bengals have cleaned him up to some degree. He's playing more with his feet, but he's still a grab. But he might get away with it in the Super Bowl. So the question is, who is he on? You know, is he on Kupp? Is he on Beckham? I don't know that I'd put him on Beckham. That one, or else just keep grabbing them and hope they don't call.
Right, yeah, exactly.
That's simple. Awuzie has been much better. Again, much better defensive play with these guys, this secondary, than you would have reason to expect. So kudos to the coaches for really doing a good job. And so, you know, you would think that Kupp and Beckham would be a big mismatch against these corners. And that's conventional wisdom. It's probably correct. The question is, how much are the officials going to let them get away with?
Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because, as we know, Beckham's a little guy. Kupp can handle anything anyone wants to throw at him. But still difficult. Mike Hilton is a really good nickel back, and it'll be interesting to see how they line up and, you know, and how they play.
And Hilton will hit you.
And Hilton will hit you. Yes, absolutely. The safeties, Von Bell, has one interception. He's a good player, and you could match him on Higbee and not have to hold your breath or help him every play. Higbee's going to win his share and maybe more. But Von Bell will hold his own. I think the real problem is at corner, and that's in the hands of the officials. If they, as I say, been there, done that. And if they allow him to grab, they can take anybody away. And then Bates is the best safety nobody knows. And as you saw in the championship game, when Patrick tried to fit the ball in there in a fit of frustration, to Tyreek, over the top came James to intercept the ball. He is a really, really, really good safety. So, but he's a ball hawk. He's a guy, you know, he's a true free safety. So the other guys have to do their jobs, and then he'll clean it up, both tackling and with his ball skills. And Logan Wilson is an outstanding cover linebacker, outstanding. So as is Pratt. Pratt's really good too. So up the middle, the Bengals have, Reeder, B.J. Hill, Pratt, Wilson, Bates, Bell. That's pretty good. But on the outside, where the Rams really shine. So what that tells you is, again, the team that pass protects best is the team that's likely to win. And that's even more true of the Rams, because as we see, they really kind of have to make their money run outside with the passing game. That's really, especially if Akers is not 100%, that's where they're going to make their money. And they do have the Bengals overmatched there. The question is, can you protect? And then how much, I keep coming back to this, but as a victim of it,
yeah, exactly.
I can tell you, if the officials just spot the ball, all bets are off, literally.
This is the time in court when you do your victim presentations day.
And Bill, obviously it's the all-star crew rules, but Torbert is very much towards the bottom of the league in DPI.
Yes, he is. You bet he is.
Oh, here we go.
That is not the officiating crew that the Rams wanted. No. I think they probably wanted Hockley.
Yeah. Sean is running away with the DPI call win.
You know, without being handsy, you know, from what I've seen, the film I looked at, you can double Cooper Kupp. He's still getting open. I mean, he beats double teams.
Well, they'll find ways to get him open. The big thing is down the field. It isn't so much illegal contact or defensive holding. It's down the field. What are they allowed to do him, you know, when he's going for the ball? Do they allow people to go through his back? When he beats the first guy, do they allow him to grab jerseys, which now you're grabbing jerseys is back in vogue? You know, so that all of that stuff is what is the hidden part of the game that most fans don't see, and even the broadcasters, unless it's egregious, don't see. But it plays a huge part.
Or when the broadcasters see it, they're dismissive of it. Oh, well, it didn't really impede him. You know, or that's not really passing.
That's nonsense, but yeah.
That's what I'm saying. It's just, you know.
Bill, do you think Torbert's proclivity to call his crews to call offensive holding offsets the DPI, especially with this matchup? If you just sort of think about it on paper, that the Bengals might hold more?
No, because the game's going to be decided down the field. I mean, that's where the game's decided. If you allow a corner who's overmatched to play with his hands and not his feet, you've given the defense an incredible advantage.
Right.
Whereas holding, you know, it's six of one, half a dozen of another. And again, in these games, they tend to let the players play. They don't want to, the officials don't want to decide these games. Witness, again, the Rams Saints championship game. They don't want to decide these games. I won't say they choke, but they sure don't want to be in position where they're deciding the game. And again, you know, if the defense can grab and hold and interfere down the field, they got a hell of an advantage. I don't care how good you are.
Mm-hmm. And then here's a weird one that we didn't hit. How worried would you be about Matt Orzech, the long snapper for the Rams, second-year player, playing at home, probably a dream scenario? Does that make you nervous or give you a pause that maybe you could have weird things in the snapping, in the snapping version of the long snap in the Super Bowl?
No, I don't think so. The only you know, the rules protect them, so all they have to do is what they do. They just have to execute week after week. What would worry me is if the officials just become ball spotters,
right?
Where they're not calling anything, so they allow someone to get on the center's head,
okay,
or on his outside shoulder and really blast away a snapper, I should say, and blast away. That becomes a huge issue. Or if they allow people to knock him off and send rushes through that gap, which is blatantly illegal. If they decide to just be ball spotters, that's a real problem for everybody.
Okay.
When the officials don't officiate, skilled people suffer. That's the bottom line. And they don't cancel each other out. Offensive holding does not cancel out illegal contact, which, by the way, was down God knows how much, hundreds of percents this year. It doesn't cancel out DPI. You know, it just doesn't. Think about this. Offensive holding is 10 yards. DPI is 50 yards.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Simple as that.
One, also looking at this crew, this could be a very low penalty game, right?
Well, the league wants low penalty games. And it got low penalty games in the championship games. Those games were played pretty close to 3 hours, even though they may slip in an extra commercial or two. And we'll talk in a second about the difference in the Super Bowl in terms of timing.
Yeah.
But they don't want a lot of penalties. This is not a league office that
right
is happy with 16 penalties a game. So the officials know that they know what they're grading on. So And there are many people that believe that they officiate to get grades and not to officiate the game. I don't think that's entirely true, but you know, there's a school of thought that says that. But one thing we know, the analytics have told you who does what. And as you correctly point out, Torbert's crews are traditionally low flag crews.
Yeah. And look, Bill, I mean, you know, and, you know, officials are human like anybody else. It may not be overt, but if you know you're going to get a slap on the ass versus a pat on the back, how do you keep that out of your mind when you know really what your bosses want you to do? It's a hard.
Yes. Yeah, that's correct.
Hard thing. It's a hard,
a thing. Hard thing to do. Let's talk about the little hidden things that are in the Super Bowl. Number one, you get to the stadium very, very early. Typically, the offensive linemen will get there 4 hours before the game. The other people are, you know, required to be there 2 hours before game time. Typically, with the police escorts and wherever you're staying and what have you, you're there 4 hours before the game time. So the players have to be fed at halftime because that means they eat 6 hours before game time. So you have to be really conscious of keeping them fed, keeping them hydrated. And now the pregame show has been cut down somewhat, thank God. It used to be 45 minutes between the warm-up and the kickoff. I think it's now closer to 25, which is a good thing. But still, you're out there warming up, and then you go back in the locker room, and you got a period of time where, you know, you're idle and your nerves can kick in and so on and so forth. And then, of course, with the introduction of the teams, that's always emotional. The emotion peaks at that point in time. And to use the old Marsh Lareth, Adam Vinatieri line, the team that recognizes that it's just another football game first is usually the one that wins. So you got to get control of your emotions. And that's up to the head coaches to get the teams, you know, in sync and control of their emotions before kickoff. But fortunately, the time between the warm-up and taking the field has now, thank God, been reduced. In my day, it was 45, closer to an hour. And that's bad. Halftime is still, in the end, 35 to 40 minutes. So you feed them at halftime. You have food in there, not sandwiches, but bagels and juice and other food that's going to stimulate activity. And they eat at halftime. And you do have time to make detailed adjustments at halftime. So people who've been to the Super Bowl before or who are prepared to do it, even though their teams may not have been, have an alternative game plan for the second half available that they practiced. Now you have a chance to go to that game plan and adjust it according to what you've seen in the first half. So the first couple series of the second half, if you're watching the game on TV, are kind of dispositive because you may see different offensive sets. You may see different offensive approach. Typically, halftime adjustments are figments of people's imagination. In the Super Bowl, they are not.
Yeah. Bill, given the Vinatieri line, how much does it matter that a lot of the Ram players would have been there before, not many of the Cincinnati players?
It means something. It means something. You know, the first time you're there, it's an overwhelming experience. Keep in mind that for all of the players, this is the culmination of a dream that they've had since they've been 10 years old.
Right.
So, I mean, that's, I don't care how good a player you are. I don't care how dominant you've been throughout your life, which all of these players are. They were the best players on their Pop Warner team, the best players on their high school team, the best players on their college team.
Yep. Yep.
But it's still the dream, you know, it's what you've always, it's your boyhood dream. You're getting to live it. And you have typically, at least the teams I've been with, we encourage the players to make sure that they got their tickets to people who really mean something to them. And invariably, the teams I was with, that's what they did. So you would see, you know, high school coaches, Pop Warner coaches, mom and dad, Uncle Charlie, whatever. You know, so that's emotional for them.
For sure. And also, right, try to get that in the two-week ones, get that done in the first week so you're not worrying about it.
Oh, yeah, the ticket stuff. You got to get it right away. For example, I think in Buffalo we were the first people to open practice to the families on Saturday. It's now become a tradition with many teams. And that's very emotional because after practice is over, all the loved ones come down and take pictures with their son or relative, and the position groups are taking pictures with their position coach. It's an emotional time. And that's
right. And you know, chances are this is the last time you're a team. I mean,
well, that's what you think. No, yeah. This I may never be here again.
I may never get back, and I may never get to be with these guys again who I come to consider my brothers.
The emotions are also raised when one team is clearly playing for an entire city. I mean, you see the amount of people that showed up in Cincinnati in the last week and a half. It's hard to process the pressure.
Yeah, And we did our best. All the five that I was in, we did our best to try and segregate the players from that. But for example, when you go back to the hotel on Saturday, if you use a Hideaway hotel, which we did every Super Bowl, when you go back to the regular hotel, all the families are there and all the hangers on are there. It's incredible. You know, we even debated going from practice to the Hideaway Hotel.
Well, the Rams have it easy because they only had 500 people show up to the pep rally.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, that's LA, but you know, still the people that are coming in for the Rams players and coaches are the ones that really count, and there will be plenty of those. So those are the ones that affect you emotionally. You don't care about the pep rallies or any of that stuff. It's the people, you know, grandma and grandpa who took you to your first football game.
This is not only the culmination of your, it's a culmination of their lives.
Of their
too.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're the ones who drove you to practice every day. Yep, and
that's exactly right. That's exactly right. I can't tell you how many parents and relatives I've run into on that Saturday practice before the Super Bowl who come over and say, thank you for bringing my son.
Yeah.
It's pretty nice.
Yeah, it is. It's emotional. Yeah, and I mean, so you got to get past that. And then you got to get past, hopefully, you know, by the time you hit Saturday, you're past all of the, you know, the crib didn't get delivered to the room and Aunt Bessie lost her tickets, and, you know. All of that happens, and that's what your staff is there. By the time the Super Bowl is over, your administrative staff are the walking dead. I mean, they're saints. They're not New Orleans saints, literal saints, because of all the stuff they've had to handle.
All I can say for us, Bill, is poor Steve.
Yeah, exactly. He's got the best book of all in terms of Super Bowl experiences. But all of that goes into the game. I mean, that goes into your mindset coming into the game. And I'll never forget, you know, looking at the highlight film, I guess it was 06 when we won in Miami, and they had a photo, they had a montage of the players coming out of the locker room and, you know, running out through all the smoke and everything and through the, you know, through the gauntlet of service people and what have you. And Freddie Quijano was crying to beat the band, you know, and he's as tough and hard nosed a guy as you'd ever run across. It was just the amount of emotion that's there. Peyton made a great statement, which floored me when he made it. They asked him, you know, what he was going to remember most about the Super Bowl aside from the playing of the game. And he said, I always wanted to be on the field and watch all those cameras flashing. Meaning the phones. And I thought, wow, everybody has the dream, right?
Right.
Yeah.
They, it doesn't matter who you are. It's the culmination of your lifelong dream. And fans need to recognize that because it does affect how the players play and how they concentrate. And as a coaching staff, and as an administrative staff, you're always trying to make sure that you keep it just another game as much as you can.
Very, very true.
Very tough, though.
Especially when literally, I think, an entire city is bonded.
I mean, that's the thing. Yeah. I mean, if it's, you know, there's certain cities where that's the biggest thing that's ever going to, you know, Los Angeles and New York.
If you can get through the Bengals cut up that they did of that city's reaction to winning the AFC Championship game without shedding a tear, you're dead inside. I mean, it's just the impact that had on those people.
The championship game, in many ways, is the most wonderful and purest celebration that you have, because it's with your fans who have been with you from the start. It's with your teammates with whom you shared the journey and may not ever again.
Right.
It's the recognition that you've reached the pinnacle. You still have one more mountain to climb, but you're there. And it's not shared with all of these hangers-on and supernumeraries that surround the Super Bowl. Even the media that covers it are people that, by and large, you know and you've kind of worked with all season. Even the so-called national media like Peter King and people like that, they're familiar. They know you, and you know them. The Super Bowl is surrounded by so many hangers-on and charlatans and, people. I mean, I could do a whole book on that, but the
talking your way into a press pass.
The one story that stands out that's obvious is that we made it clear by Mr. Irsay's dictum, which both Tony and I agreed with 1,000%, that everybody was going back to Indianapolis for the celebration, and then whoever was going to go to Disneyland would go to Disneyland. You know, and if they couldn't put it off for a day, then so what? It was more important to have the team with their fans in Indianapolis. So we come in the locker room, and it's, you know, by the time you get there after the Super Bowl, it's almost 45 minutes after the game has ended. We come in the locker room, and there's a guy that I've never seen before walking around, and he's looking for, I forget whether it was, I think it was Dominic Rhodes. And I said, excuse me, who are you looking for? Strange face in a sea of strange faces. And he said, Dominic Rhodes. I said, why? He said, I'm here to take him to Disneyland. And I exploded. I said, we told you that the entire team is going back to Indianapolis. We told the league was supposed to tell you, no, I got to take him. I said, I just said to the security people, get him out of here. that's the kind of stuff that occurs. You know, you're celebrating the greatest victory of your life.
Yeah.
It may never happen again. And some guy's concerned about taking a player to Disney.
He's talking about Mickey Mouse. It's literally Mickey Mouse stuff.
Yeah, I think Bill's going to get a gig moonlighting as the greeter at Disney World.
Yeah.
All right, gang, that is our show for this week. We are jacked for Super Bowl 56. I think there's a little bit of a Cincinnati lean on the pod, a better shot than I think a lot of people think that they've got. All right, gang, this should be fun. Rick, are you ready?
I'm ready. And as you say, if anything, this should make you, rethink what you're going to do when you get into that room with all those other people and who you're putting your money down on. So, that's why they play them. So we'll talk to you next week when we all know what happened.
All right, see you again.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.